It won't do him any harm, will it? Glockter looked back at the mangled body.
I suppose it won't, at that.
So, come on, you should know, Luthar or Gorst?
Gorst. I hope he carves the little bastard in two.
Really? People say he's a clumsy ox, lucky is all.
Well, I say he's a genius, said Glockter. In a couple of years they'll all be fencing like him, if you can call it fencing. You mark my words.
Ghost, eh? Maybe I'll have a little bet.
You do that. But in the meantime, you'd better scrape this meth up and take it to the university. Get Froth to give you a hand. He's got a strong stomach.
The university?
Well, we can't just leave it here. Some fashionable lady taking a turn in the park could get an awful shock.
Severard giggled.
And I might just know of someone who can shed some light on this little mystery.
This is quite an interesting discovery you've made, Inquisitor.
The Adeptus Physical paused in his work and peered over at Glockter, one eye enormously magnified through his glittering eyeglass.
"Quite a fascinating discovery,"
he muttered as he returned to the corpse with his instruments, lifting, prodding, twisting, squinting down at the glistening flesh. Glockter peered round the laboratory, his lip curling with distaste. Jars of many different sizes lined two of the four walls, filled with floating, pickled lumps of meat. Some of those floating things Glockter recognized as parts of the human body. Some he did not. Even he felt slightly uncomfortable in amongst the macabre display.
I wonder how Candelow came by them all. Do his visitors end up dismembered, floating in a dozen different jars? Perhaps I would make an interesting specimen.
Fascinating!
The Adeptus loosened the strap of his eyeglass and perched it on top of his head, rubbing at the pink ring it had left behind around his eye.
What can you tell me about it?
Glockter frowned.
I came here to find out what you can tell me about it.
Of course, of course.
Candelow pursed his lips.
Well, as to the gender of our unfortunate friend,
he trailed off.
Well?
Well, the organs that would allow one to make an easy determination are...
and he gestured at the meat on the table, harshly lit under the blazing lamps.
Absent.
And that is the sum of your investigation?
Well, there are other things. A man's third finger is typically longer than his first, not necessarily so with a woman, but our remnant does not have all the digits necessary to make such a judgment. As to gender, therefore, without the fingers, we are quite stumped.
He giggled nervously at his own joke. Glockter did not.
Young or old?
Well, again, that is quite difficult to determine, I'm afraid.
And the Adeptus tapped at the corpse with his tongs.
Teeth here are in good condition, and such skin as remains would appear to be consistent with a younger person, but this is really just... So... what can you tell me about the victim? Nothing.
And he smiled apologetically.
But I have made some interesting discoveries as to the cause of death.
Really?
Oh, yes, look at this.
I would rather not.
Glockter limped cautiously over to the bench, peering down at the spot the old man was indicating.
You see here, the shape of this wound?
The Adeptus prodded at a flap of gristle.
No, I do not see,
said Glockter. It appears all to be one enormous wound to me. The old man leaned towards him, his eyes wide.
Human,
he said.
We know that it is human. This is a foot. No, no, these teeth marks here, they are human bites.
Glockter frowned.
Human bites?
Absolutely.
Candelow's beaming smile was quite at odds with the surroundings, and with the subject matter, I rather think.
This individual was bitten to death by another person and, in all likelihood,
and he gestured triumphantly at the mess on his table,
considering the incomplete nature of the remains, partially eaten.
Glockter stared at the old man for a moment.
Eaten? Eaten? Why must every question answered raise 10 more?
This is what you would have me tell the Archlector?
The Adeptus laughed nervously.
Well, these are the facts, as I see them.
A person unidentified, perhaps a man, perhaps a woman, either young or old, was attacked in the park by an unknown assailant, bitten to death within 200 strides of the king's palace, and partially eaten?
Candelau gave a worried glance sideways towards the entrance. Glockter turned to look and frowned. There was a new arrival there, one that he had not heard enter. A woman, standing in the shadows at the edge of the bright lamplight with her arms folded. A tall woman, with short, spiky red hair and a black mask on her face, staring at Glockter and the Adeptus through narrowed eyes. A practical, but not one I recognize, and women are quite a rarity in the Inquisition, I would have thought.
Good afternoon, good afternoon.
A man stepped briskly through the door, gaunt, balding, with a long black coat and a prim little smile on his face. An unpleasantly familiar man.
Goyle, damn him. Our new superior of Adua arrived at last. Great news.
Inquisitor Glockter, he purred. What an absolute pleasure it is to see you again.
Likewise, Superior Goyle.
You bastard.
Two other figures followed close behind the grinning superior, making the glaring little room seem quite crowded. One was a dark-skinned, stocky cantic with a big golden ring through his ear. The other was a monster of a Northman, with a face like a stone slab. He almost had to stoop to cram himself through the doorway. Both were masked and dressed from head to toe in practicals black.
This is Practical Vitari,
chuckled Goyle, indicating the red-haired woman who had flowed over to the jars and was peering into them, one at a time, tapping on the glass and making the specimens wobble.
And these are Practicals Halim?
The southerner sidled past Goyle and into the room, busy eyes darting here and there.
And Baya?
The monstrous Northman gazed down at Glockter from up near the ceiling.
In his own country, they call him the Stone Splitter, would you believe? But I don't think that would work here, do you, Glockter? Practical Stone Splitter. Can you imagine?
He laughed softly to himself and shook his head.
And this is the Inquisition? I had no idea the circus was in town. I wonder if they stand on each other's shoulders, or jump through flaming hoops.
A remarkably diverse selection, said Glockter. Oh, yes, laughed Goyle. I have picked them up wherever my travels have taken me, eh, my friends?
The woman shrugged as she prowled around the jars. The dark-skinned practical inclined his head. The towering Northman simply stood there.
Wherever my travels have taken me,
chuckled Goyle, just as though everyone else had laughed with him.
And I have more besides. It's been quite a time, I do declare.
He wiped a tear of mirth from his eye as he moved towards the table in the centre of the room. It seemed that everything was a source of amusement to him, even the thing on the bench.
But what's all this? A body, unless I'm quite mistaken.
Goyle looked up sharply, his eyes sparkling.
A body? A death within the city? As superior of Adua, surely that falls within my province.
Glockter bowed.
Naturally, I was not aware that you had arrived, Superior Goyle. Also, I felt that the unusual circumstances of this...
Unusual? I see nothing unusual.
Glockter paused.
What game is this chuckling fool playing? Surely you would agree that the violence here is exceptional.
Goyle gave a flamboyant shrug.
Dogs!
dogs? Asked Glockter, unable to let that one pass.
Domestic pets run mad, do you think, or wild ones which climbed over the walls?
The superior only smiled.
Whichever you like, Inquisitor, whichever you like.
I'm afraid it could not possibly be dogs,
the Adeptus Physical began pompously to explain.
I was only just making clear to Inquisitor Glockter, these marks here, and on the skin here, do you see, these are human bites, undoubtedly.
The woman sauntered away from the jars, closer and closer to Candelour, leaning in towards him until her mask was only inches away from his beak of a nose. He slowly trailed off.
Fox,
she whispered, then barked in his face. The Adeptus jumped away.
Well, I suppose I could have been mistaken, of course.
He backed into the enormous Northman's chest, who had moved with surprising speed to position himself directly behind. Candelour turned slowly around, staring up with wide eyes.
Dogs,
intoned the giant.
Dogs! Dogs! Dogs!
Hummed the southerner in a thick accent.
Of course!
Squeaked Candelour.
Dogs! Of course! How foolish I've been!
Dogs! Shouted Goyle in delight, throwing his hands in the air. The mystery is solved!
To Glockter's amazement, two of the three practicals began politely to applaud. The woman stayed silent.
I never believed that I would miss Superior Kayline, but suddenly I am overcome with nostalgia.
Goyle turned slowly round, bowing low.
My first day here, and already I warm to the work. You can bury this, he said, gesturing to the corpse and smiling broadly at the cringing Adeptus. Best buried, eh?
He looked over at the Northman.
Back to the mud, as you say in your country?
The massive practical showed not the slightest sign that anyone had spoken. The Cantic was standing there, turning the ring through his ear, round and round. The woman was peering down at the carcass on the table, sniffing at it through her mask. The Adeptus Physical was backed up against his jars, sweating profusely.
Enough of this pantomime. I have work to do.
Well, said Glockter stiffly, limping for the door, the mystery is solved. You don't need me any more.
Superior Goyle turned to look at him. His good humour suddenly vanished.
No, he hissed, furious little eyes nearly popping out of his head. We don't need you any more.
Chapter 36. Never bet against a Magus. Logan sat in the hot sun, hunched over on his bench, and sweated. The ridiculous clothes did not help with the sweating, or indeed with anything else. The tunic had not been designed to sit down in, and the stiff leather dug painfully into his fruits whenever he tried to move.
Fucking thing, he growled, tugging at it for the 20th time.
Quai looked hardly more comfortable in his magical garb. The glittering of the gold and silver symbols only served to make his face look the more ill and pallid, his eyes the more twitchy and bulging. He'd hardly spoken a word all morning. Of the three of them, only Baez appeared to be enjoying himself, beaming round at the surging crowds on the benches, the sunlight shining off his tanned pate. They stood out among the heaving audience like well-rotted fruit, and seemed about as popular. Even though the benches were packed shoulder to shoulder, a small, nervous space had built up around the three of them where no one would sit. The noise was even more crushing than the heat and the crowds. Logan's ears hummed with the din. It was the most he could do to keep from clamping his hands over them and throwing himself under the bench for cover. Baez leaned towards him.
Was this what your duels were like?
He had to shout, even though his mouth was barely 6 inches from Logan's ear.
Ah.
Even when Logan had fought Rudd Three Trees, when a good part of Bethod's army had drawn up in a great half-circle to watch, shouting and screaming and hammering their weapons against their shields, when the walls of Ufrith above them had been crammed with onlookers, his audience had not been half this size, not half this noisy. No more than 30 men had watched him kill Sharma Heartless. Kill him, then butcher him like a pig. Logan winced and flinched and hunched his shoulders higher at the memory of it. Cutting and cutting and licking the blood from his fingers, while the dogman stared in horror and Bethod laughed and cheered him on. He could taste the blood now, and he shuddered and wiped his mouth. There had been so many fewer people, and yet the stakes had been so much higher. The lives of the fighters, for one thing, and the ownership of land, of villages, of towns, the futures of whole clans. When he'd fought Tal Duru, no more than 100 had watched, but perhaps the whole fate of the North had turned on that bloody half-hour. If he'd lost then, if the Thunderhead had killed him, would things be the same? If Black Dow or Harding Grimm or any of those others had put him in the mud, would Bethod have a golden chain now and call himself a king? Would this union be at war with the North? The thought made his head hurt even more.
"You all right?" asked Baez.
Logan mumbled, but he was shivering even in the heat. What were all these people here for? Only to be amused. Few could have found Logan's battles very amusing, except Bethod, perhaps. Few others. "This isn't like my fights," he muttered to himself.
"What's that?"
asked Baez.
"Nothing."
"Ah." The old man beamed around at the crowd, scratching at his short grey beard.
"Who do you think will win?"
Logan really didn't much care, but he reckoned that any distraction from his memories was welcome. He peered into the enclosures where the two fighters were getting ready, not far from where he was sitting. The handsome, proud young man they'd met at the gate was one of them. The other was heavy and powerful-looking, with a thick neck and a look almost bored. He shrugged his shoulders.
"I don't know anything about this business."
"What, you? The Bloody Nine? A champion who fought and won 10 challenges? The most feared man in the North? No opinion? Surely single combat is the same the world over."
Logan winced and licked his lips. The Bloody Nine. That was far in the past, but not far enough for his liking. His mouth still tasted like metal, like salt, like blood. Touching a man with a sword and cutting him open with one are hardly the same things, but he looked the two opponents over again. The proud young man rolled up his sleeves, touched his toes, swiveled his body this way and that, swung his arms round in quick windmills, watched by a stern old soldier in a spotless red uniform. A tall, worried-looking man handed the fighter two thin swords, one longer than the other, and he whisked them around before him in the air with impressive speed, blades flashing. His opponent stood there, leaning against the wooden side of his enclosure, stretching his bull neck from side to side without much hurry, glancing round with lazy eyes.
"Who's who?" asked Logan.
"The pompous ass from the gate is Luthar. The one who's half asleep is Gorst."
It was plain who the crowd preferred. Luthar's name could be heard often in the din, and whoops and claps greeted every movement of his thin swords. He looked quick and deft and clever. But there was something deadly in that big man's waiting slouch, something dark about his heavy-lidded eyes. Logan would rather have fought Luthar for all his speed.
"I reckon Gorst."
"Gorst, really?"
Baez's eyes sparkled.
"How about a little bet?"
Logan heard a sharp suck of breath from Quai.
"Never bet against a Magus,"
whispered the apprentice. It didn't seem to make much difference to Logan.
"What the hell have I got to bet with?"
Baez shrugged.
"Well, let's just say for honor, then."
"If you like."
Logan had never had too much of that, and the little he did have, he didn't care about losing.
Bremer den Gorst!
The scattered clapping was smothered by an avalanche of hisses and boos as the great ox shambled towards his mark, half-closed eyes on the ground, big heavy steels dangling from his big heavy hands. Between his short-cropped hair and the collar of his shirt, where his neck should have been, there was nothing but a thick fold of muscle.
"Ugly bastard,"
Giselle murmured to himself as he watched him go.
"Damn idiot, ugly bastard."
But his curses lacked conviction, even to his own ear. He had watched that man fight 3 bouts and demolish 3 good opponents. One of them had still to leave his sickbed a week later. Giselle had been training for the last few days specifically to counter Gorst's bludgeoning style. Baruz and West swinging big broom handles at him while he dodged this way and that. More than once, one of them had made contact, and Giselle was still smarting from the bruises.
"Gorst!"
offered the referee plaintively, doing his best to wheedle some applause from the audience, but they were having none of it. The boos only became louder, joined by jeers and heckling as Gorst took his mark.
"You clumsy ox! Get back to your farm and pull a plough! Bremer the brute!"
and other such. The people stretched back and back and back into obscurity. Everyone was there. Everyone in the world, it looked like. Every commoner in the city round the distant edges. Every gentleman, artisan, and trader thronging the middle benches. Every noble man or woman in the agriont towards the front, from fifth sons of high-born nobodies to the great magnates of the open and closed councils. The royal box was full. The queen, the 2 princes, Lord Hoff, the Princess Therese. The king even appeared to be awake for once. Truly an honour, his goggling eyes staring around in amazement. Out there somewhere were Giselle's father and his brothers, his friends and fellow officers, his entire acquaintance, more or less. Ardy, too, he hoped, watching. All in all, it was quite an audience.
"Giselle den Luther!"
bellowed the referee. The meaningless bibble-babble of the crowd surged into a storm of cheering, a thunderous wave of support. The cries and shouts rang and echoed around the arena, making Giselle's head throb.
"Come on, Luther! Luther! Kill the bastard!"
and others such.
"Off you go, Giselle,"
whispered Marshal Varouz in his ear, clapping him on the back and pushing him gently out towards the circle.
"And good luck!"
Giselle walked in a daze, the noise of the crowd punching at his ears until it seemed his head would split. The training of the last few months flashed through his mind. The running, the swimming, the work with the heavy bar, the sparring, the beam, the endless forms, the punishment, the study, the sweating and the pain. Just so he could stand here. 7 touches, the 1st to 4. It all came down to this. He took his mark opposite Gorst and stared into those heavy-lidded eyes. They looked back, cool and calm, seeming almost to stare past him as though he wasn't there. That needled him, and he pushed the thoughts out of his head and raised high his noble chin. He would not, could not, let this oaf get the better of him. He would show all these people his blood and his skill and his mettle. He was Giselle den Luther. He would win. It was an incontestable fact. He knew it.
"Begin!"
The 1st cut sent him reeling, shattering his confidence, his poise, and nearly his wrist. He had been watching Gorst fence, of course, if you could call it that, so he knew the man would come out swinging, but nothing could have prepared him for that 1st shattering contact. The crowd gasped with him as he staggered back. All his carefully laid plans, all of Varouz's carefully worded advice, vanished into air. He winced with pain and shock, his arms still vibrating from the force of that mighty blow, his ears still ringing from the crashing noise of it, his mouth hanging open, his knees wobbling. It was hardly the most promising start, but the next chop followed hard after the first, flashing down with even greater power. Giselle leapt aside and slid away, trying to make room and give himself time. Time to work out some tactic, some trick to stem the pitiless tide of swinging metal. But Gorst was not about to give him time. He was already loosing another throaty growl, his long steel already begun on its next irresistible arc. Giselle dodged where he could, blocked where he couldn't, his wrists already aching from the ceaseless punishment. To begin with, he hoped that Gorst would tire. No one could throw those great lumps of metal around for long the way that he was doing. Soon the fierce pace would take its toll on the big man, and he would slow and droop, and the heavy steels would lose their venom. Then Giselle would fight back doggedly, run his opponent ragged, and win. The crowd would crack the agreant with their cheers, a classic tale of victory against the odds. Only Gorst did not tire. The man was a machine. After a few minutes, there was still not the slightest sign of weariness in those heavy-lidded eyes. There was barely any emotion of any kind that Giselle could see during the rare moments when he dared to take his eyes away from the flashing swords. The big long steel swung, swung, swung in its brutal circles, and the short steel was always there to turn away such feeble efforts as Giselle could make in between, never faltering or dropping even an inch. The power of the blows did not decrease. The growls tore from Gorst's throat with as much vigour as ever. The crowd were given nothing to cheer at, and merely muttered angrily. It was Giselle who began to feel his legs slowing, to feel the sweat springing out of his forehead, to feel his grip on his steel slipping. He saw it coming from a mile away, but there was nothing he could do about it. He had backed off until he ran out of circle. He had blocked and parried until he lost the feeling in his fingers. This time, when he raised his aching arm and there was the crash of metal on metal, one tired foot slipped and he tumbled squawking from the ring, floundering on his side, his short steel spinning from his twitching fingers. His face slapped against the ground and he took a gritty mouthful of sand. It was a painful and embarrassing fall, but he felt too tired and too battered to be all that disappointed. He was almost relieved that the punishment was over, if only for a moment.
"One to Gorst!" shouted the referee.
A light dusting of applause was crushed beneath hoots of derision, but the big man seemed scarcely to notice, shuffling back to his mark with his head down and already preparing for the next touch. Giselle rolled slowly onto his hands and knees, flexing his aching hands and taking his time getting up. He needed a moment to breathe and make ready, to think up some strategy. Gorst waited for him, big, silent, still. Giselle brushed the sand from his shirt, mind racing. How to beat him? How? He stepped cautiously back to his mark, raised his steels.
Begin!
This time Gorst came out even harder, slashing away as if he was scything wheat, making Giselle dance around the circle. One blow passed so close to his left side that he could feel the wind from it on his cheek. The next missed him by a margin no greater on his right. Then Gorst flung a sideways sweep aimed at his head, and Giselle saw an opening. He ducked beneath it, sure the blade tore at the hairs on top of his scalp. He closed the distance as the heavy long steel swung away, almost catching the referee in the face on the backswing, leaving Gorst's right side all but undefended. Giselle lunged at the big bastard, sure he had finally got through, knowing he had made it one touch apiece. But Gorst caught the thrust on his short steel and forced it just wide, the guards of the two blades scraping, then locking together. Giselle cut at him viciously with his short steel, but somehow Gorst blocked that too, bringing up his other sword just in time, catching Giselle's blade and holding it just short of his chest. For a moment their four steels were locked together, hilts grating, their faces just a few inches apart. Giselle was snarling like a dog, teeth bared, the muscles of his face a rigid mask. Gorst's heavy features showed little sign of effort. He looked like a man having a piss, involved in a mundane and faintly distasteful task that must simply be done with as quickly as possible. For a moment their blades were locked together, Giselle pushing with every grain of strength, each hard-trained muscle flexing, legs straining against the ground, stomach straining to twist his arms, arms straining to push his hands, hands gripped around the hilts of his steels like grim death. Every muscle, every sinew, every tendon. He knew he had the better position. The big man was off balance. If only he could push him back a step, an inch. For that moment, their steels were locked together. Then Gorst dipped his shoulder and grunted and flung Giselle away, as a child might fling away a boring toy. He tumbled back, mouth and eyes wide open with surprise, feet kicking at the dirt, all his attention focused on staying upright. He heard Gorst growl again, and was shocked to see the heavy long steel already curving through the air towards him. He was in no position to dodge, and there was no time anyway. He raised his left arm on an instinct, but the thick, blunted blade tore his short steel away like a straw on the wind, and crashed into his ribs, hammering the breath from his body in a wail of pain that echoed round and round the silent arena. His legs crumpled under him, and he sprawled out on the turf, limbs flopping, sighing like a split bellows. This time, there was not even the shadow of applause. The crowd roared their hatred, booing and hissing at Gorst for all they were worth as he trudged back to his enclosure.
"Damn you, Gorst, you thug! Get up, Luther! Up and at him!
Go home, you brute! You damn savage!"
Their hisses turned to half-hearted cheers as Giselle picked himself up off the grass, his whole left side pulsing. He would have screamed with the pain if he had any breath left in him. For all his effort, for all his training, he was utterly outclassed, and he knew it. The thought of doing it all again next year made him want to vomit. He did his best to appear undaunted as he struggled back to his enclosure, but he could not help sagging down heavily in his chair when he got there, dropping his notched steels on the flags and gasping for breath. West bent over him and pulled up his shirt to check the damage. Giselle peered down gingerly, half expecting to see a great hole caved in his side, but there was only an ugly red welt across his ribs, some bruising already coming up around it.
"Anything broken?"
asked Marshal Verouse, peering over West's shoulder. Giselle fought back the tears as the Major probed his side.
"I don't think so, but damn it!"
West threw his towel down in disgust.
"You call this the beautiful sport? Is there no rule against these heavy steels?"
Verouse shook his head grimly.
"They all have to be the same length, but there's no rule for the weight. I mean, why would anyone want heavy ones?"
"Now we know, don't we?"
snapped West.
"Are you sure we shouldn't stop this before that bastard takes his head off?"
Verouse ignored him.
"Now look here," said the old marshal, leaning down to talk in Giselle's face. "It's the best of 7 touches, 1st to 4. There's still time."
Time for what? For Giselle to get cut in half, blunted steels or no?
"He's too strong,"
Giselle gasped.
"Too strong? No one's too strong for you."
But even Verouse looked doubtful.
"There's still time. You can beat him."
The old marshal tugged at his moustaches.
"You can beat him."
But Giselle noticed he did not suggest how. Glockter was becoming worried he might choke, so convulsive was his laughter. He tried to think of something he would rather see than Giselle Dan Luther being smashed around a fencing circle, and failed. The young man winced as he just barely blocked a raking cut. He had not been handling his left side at all well since he took that blow in the ribs, and Glockter could almost feel his pain.
And my, my, how nice it is to feel someone else's for a change.
The crowd sulked,
silent and brooding as Gorst harried their favourite around with his brutal slashes, while Glockter spluttered giggles through his clenched gums. Luthar was quick and flashy, and he moved well once he saw the steels coming. A competent fighter, good enough to win a contest, no doubt, in a mediocre year. Quick feet and quick hands, but his mind is not as sharp as it should be, as it needs to be. He is too predictable. Gorst was an entirely different proposition. He seemed to be swinging and swinging without a thought in his head, but Glockter knew better. He has a whole new way of doing things. It was all jab-jab in my day. By next year's contest, they'll all be chopping away with these big heavy steels. Glockter wondered idly if he could have beaten Gorst at his best. It would have been a bout worth seeing, anyway. A damn sight better than this mismatch. Gorst easily dealt with a couple of limp jabs, then Glockter winced, and the crowd hissed as Luthar just barely parried another great butcher's chop, the force of it nearly lifting him off his feet. He had no way to avoid the next swing, pressed against the edge of the circle as he was, and he was forced to jump back into the sand.
3-0, shouted the referee.
Glockter shook with merriment as he watched Luthar chop at the ground in frustration, sending up a petulant spray of sand, his face a picture of pale self-pity.
Dear me, Captain Luthar, it will be 4-0. A whitewash, an embarrassment. Perhaps this will teach that whining little shit some humility. Some men are better off for a good beating. Only look at me, eh?
Begin!
The fourth touch began precisely as the third had ended, with Luthar taking a hammering. Glockter could see it. The man was out of ideas. His left arm was moving slowly, painfully. His feet looked heavy. Another numbing blow crashed against his long steel, making him stumble back towards the edge of the circle, off balance and gasping. Gorst needed only to press his attack a little further.
And something tells me he is not the man to let up when he's ahead.
Glockter grabbed his cane, pushed himself to his feet. Anyone could see it was all over, and he had no wish to be caught in the crush as the disappointed crowds all tried to leave at once. Gorst's heavy long steel flashed down through the air.
The final blow, surely.
Luthar's only choice was to try and block it and be knocked clean out of the circle.
Or it might just split his fat head. We can hope for that.
Glockter smiled, half turned to leave. But out the corner of his eye, somehow, he saw the cut miss. Gorst blinked as his heavy long steel thudded into the turf, then grunted as Luthar caught him across the leg with a left-handed cut. It was the most emotion he had shown all day.
1-0,
shouted the referee after a brief pause, unable to entirely keep the amazement out of his voice.
No,
murmured Glockter to himself, as the crowd around him erupted into riotous applause.
No.
He had fought hundreds of touches in his youth and watched thousands more, but he had never seen anything quite like that, never seen anyone move so quickly. Luthar was a good swordsman, he knew it,
but no one is that good.
He frowned as he watched the two finalists come out from their second break and take their marks.
Begin!
Luthar was transformed. He harried Gorst with furious, lightning jabs, giving him no time to get started. It was the big man now who seemed stretched to the limit, blocking, dodging, trying to stay out of reach. It was as though they had sneaked the old Luthar away in the break and replaced him with a different man altogether. A stronger, faster, far more confident twin brother. So long denied something to cheer for, the crowd whooped and yelled as though they'd split their throats. Glockter did not share their enthusiasm.
Something is wrong here. Something is wrong.
He glanced across the faces nearby, but no one else had sensed anything amiss.
They only saw what they wanted to see. Luthar giving the ugly brute a spectacular and well-deserved thrashing. Glockter's eyes scanned across the benches, not knowing what he was looking for. Baez, so-called. Sitting near the front, leaning forward, and staring at the two fighters with fixed concentration, his apprentice and the scarred Northman beside him. No one else noticed it. Everyone was intent on the fighters before them. But Glockter did. He rubbed his eyes and looked again. Something wrong.
Say one thing for the first of the Magi. Say he's a cheating bastard, growled Logan.
Baez had a little smile at the corner of his mouth as he mopped the sweat from his forehead.
Whoever said he wasn't?
Luthar was in trouble again. Bad trouble. Each time he blocked one of those heavy sweeps, his sword snapped back further. His grip seemed slacker. Each time he dodged, he ended up a little further back towards the edge of the yellow circle. Then, when the end seemed certain, out of the corner of his eye, Logan saw the air above Baez's shoulders shimmer, as it had on the road south when the trees burned, and he felt that strange tugging at his guts. Luthar seemed suddenly to find new vigor. He caught the next great blow on the grip of his short sword. A moment before, it might easily have sent the thing flying from his hand. Now he held it there for an instant, then flung it away with a cry, pushing his opponent off balance and jumping forward suddenly on the attack.
"If you were caught cheating in a northern duel," growled Logan, shaking his head, "they'd cut the bloody cross into your stomach and pull your guts out."
"Lucky for me," murmured Baez through gritted teeth, without taking his eyes away from the fighters, "that we are in the north no longer."
Sweat was already beading his bald scalp again, running down his face in fat drops. His fists were clenched tight and trembling with effort. Luthar struck furiously again and again, his swords a flashing blur. Gorst grunted and growled as he turned the blows away, but Luthar was too quick for him now, and too strong. He drove him mercilessly across the circle, like a crazy dog might drive a cow.
"Fucking cheating," growled Logan again,
as Luthar's blade flashed and left a bright red line across Gorst's cheek. A few drops of blood spattered across into the crowd on Logan's left, and they exploded into riotous cheering. That, just for a moment, was a shadow of his own duels. The referee's cry of three apiece could hardly be heard at all. Gorst frowned slightly and touched one hand to his face. Above the din, Logan could just hear Quai's whisper.
"Never bet against a Magus."
Giselle knew that he was good, but he had never dreamed he could be this good. He was sharp as a cat, nimble as a fly, strong as a bear. His ribs no longer hurt, his wrists no longer hurt. All trace of tiredness had left him, all trace of doubt. He was fearless, peerless, unstoppable. The applause thundered around him, and yet he could hear every word of it, see every detail of every face in the crowd. His heart was pumping tingling fire instead of blood. His lungs were sucking in the very clouds. He did not bother even to sit in the break, so great was his eagerness to get back into the circle. The chair was an insult to him. He was not listening to what Varouz and West were saying. They were of no importance, little people far below. They stared at him, flushed, amazed, as well they might be. He was the greatest swordsman ever. That cripple Glockter could not have known how right he was. Giselle had only to try, it seemed, and he could have anything he wanted. He chuckled as he danced back to the mark. He laughed as he heard the crowd's cheer. He smiled at Gorst as he stepped back into the circle. All was precisely as it should be. Those eyes were still heavy-lidded, lazy above the little red cut that Giselle had given him. But there was something else there now as well, a trace of shock, of wariness, of respect. as well there might be. There was nothing that Giselle could not do. He was invincible. He was unstoppable. He was...
Begin!
Completely lost. The pain lanced through his side and made him gasp. Suddenly, he was afraid and tired and weak again. Gorst growled and unleashed his savage cuts, jarring the steels in Giselle's hands, making him jump like a frightened rabbit. The mastery was gone. The anticipation, the nerve, and Gorst's onslaught was more brutal than ever. He felt a terrible lurch of despair as his long steel was torn from his buzzing fingers, flew through the air, and clattered into the barrier. Giselle was bludgeoned to his knees. The crowd gasped. It was all over. It was not over. The blow was arcing down towards him. The final blow. It seemed to drift, slow, slow, as though through honey. Giselle smiled. It was a simple matter for him to push it away with his short steel. The strength flowed again. He sprang upwards, shoved Gorst away with his empty hand, flicked another swing aside, and then another, his one sword doing the work of two with time to spare. The arena was breathless silent, but for the rapid clashing of the steels. Right and left went the short blade, flashing faster than his eye could follow, faster than his mind could think, seeming almost to be dragging him along behind it. There was a squeal of metal on metal as it tore Gorst's notched long steel from his hand, then another as it flickered across and did the same with his short. For a moment all was still. The big man, disarmed and with his heels on the very edge of the circle, looked up at Giselle. The crowd was silent. Then Giselle slowly lifted his short steel, all of a sudden seeming to weigh a ton, and poked Gorst gently in the ribs with it. "Ah," said the big man quietly, raising his eyebrows. Then the crowd exploded into deafening applause. The noise went on and on, rising and rising, washing over Giselle in waves. Now that it was finished, he felt drained beyond description. He closed his eyes, swaying. His sword dropped from his nerveless fingers, and he sank to his knees. He was beyond exhaustion. It was as though he had used a whole week's energy in a few moments. Even kneeling was an effort he was not sure he could sustain for long, and if he fell, he was not sure he could ever get up again. But then he felt strong hands taking him under the arms, and felt himself being lifted. The noise of the crowd grew even louder as he was hoisted into the air. He opened his eyes. Bleary, blurry color flashed in front of him as he was turned around. His head rang with the sound. He was up on someone's shoulders. A shaved head. Gorst! The big man had lifted him up as a father might lift his child, displaying him to the crowd, smiling up at him with a big ugly grin. Giselle smiled back, despite himself. It was a strange moment, all in all.
"Luther wins!"
cried the referee, pointlessly, barely audible.
"Luther wins!"
The cheering had resolved itself into a steady chant of, "Luther! Luther! Luther!" The arena shook with it. Giselle's head swam with it. It was like being drunk. Drunk on victory. Drunk on yourself. Gorst lowered him back to the circle as the cheering of the crowd began to fade.
"You beat me," he said, smiling wide. His voice was strangely high and soft, almost like a woman's. "Fair and square. I'd like to be the first to congratulate you."
And he nodded his big head and smiled again, rubbing at the cut under his eye without the slightest bitterness.
"You deserve it," he said, holding out his hand. "Thank you."
Giselle flashed a sour smile and gave the man's big paw as cursory a squeeze as possible. Then he turned away towards his enclosure. Of course he fucking deserved it, and he was damned if he would let that bastard bask in his reflected glory a moment longer.
"Bravely done, my boy! Bravely done!" frothed Marshal Veruz, slapping him on the shoulder as he stumbled back to his chair on wobbly legs. "I knew you could do it!"
West grinned as he handed him the towel.
"They'll be talking about this for years."
Other well-wishers crowded in, offering their congratulations, leaning over the barrier. A whirl of smiling faces, and in amongst them, the face of Giselle's father, shining with pride.
"I knew that you could do it, Giselle. I never doubted, not for a minute. You've brought honor to our family."
Giselle noticed that his elder brother didn't look all that pleased about it, though. He had the usual stodgy, envious expression on his face, even at Giselle's moment of victory. The stodgy, envious bastard. Could he not be happy for his brother, if only for one day?
"May I, too, congratulate the winner?" came a voice from over his shoulder.
It was that old idiot, the one from the gate, the one whom Sulphur had called his master, the one who had used the name Baez. He had sweat on his bald skull, a lot of it. His face was pale, his eyes sunken, almost as if he had just done 7 touches with Gorst.
"Well done indeed, my young friend, an almost magical performance."
"Thank you," muttered Giselle. He was not at all sure who this old man was or what he was after, but he did not trust him in the least.
"I'm sorry, though, I must..."
"Oh, of course. We will talk later."
He said it with a disturbing finality, as if it were a thing already arranged. Then he turned away and vanished smoothly into the crowds. Giselle's father stared after him, ashen-faced now, as though he had seen a ghost.
"Do you know him, father?"
"I..."
"Giselle!"
Veruz grabbed his arm excitedly.
"Come, the king wishes to congratulate you."
He dragged Giselle from his family and towards the circle. A scattering of applause rose up again as they walked together across the dry grass, the scene of Giselle's victory. The Lord Marshal slung a fatherly arm around his shoulder and smiled up at the crowds as though the applause was all for him. Everyone wanted a piece of his glory, it seemed, but Giselle was able to shake the old man off as he mounted the steps of the royal box. Prince Reynold, youngest son of the king, was first in line, humbly dressed, honest and thoughtful-seeming, scarcely looking like royalty at all.
"Well done!"
he shouted over the roar of the crowd, sounding truly delighted for Giselle's victory.
"Well done, indeed!"
His older brother was more exuberant.
"Incredible!"
shouted Crown Prince Ladislaw, the sunlight glinting off the golden buttons on his white jacket.
"Capital! Amazing! Spectacular! I never saw such a thing!"
Giselle grinned and bowed humbly as he went past, hunching his shoulders as the Crown Prince slapped him somewhat too hard on the back.
"I always knew you'd do it! You were always my man!"
The Princess Therese, only daughter of the Grand Duke Orso of Tallinns, watched Giselle pass with a tiny, disdainful smile, tapping 2 languid fingers against her palm in a quarter-hearted imitation of clapping. Her chin was raised painfully high, as though just to be looked at by her was an honour he could never fully appreciate, and certainly did not deserve. And so he came at last to the high seat of Guslaf V, High King of the Union. His head was slumped sideways, squashed down under the sparkling crown. His pasty pale fingers twitched on his crimson silk mantle like white slugs. His eyes were closed, chest rising and falling gently, accompanied by gentle splutterings as spittle issued from his slack lips and ran down his chin, joining the sweat on his bulging jowls and helping it to turn his high collar dark with wet. Truly, Giselle was in the presence of greatness.
"Your Majesty," murmured Lord Hoff.
The head of state did not respond.
His wife, the Queen, looked on, painfully erect, a fixed, emotionless smile plastered across her well-powdered face. Giselle hardly knew where to look, and settled on his dusty shoes. The Lord Chamberlain coughed loudly. A muscle twitched beneath the sweaty fat on the side of the King's face, but he did not wake. Hoff winced, and, glancing around to make sure no one was watching too closely, jabbed the royal ribs with his finger. The King jumped, eyelids suddenly flicking wide open, heavy jowls wobbling, staring at Giselle with wild, bloodshot, red-rimmed eyes.
"Your Majesty, this is Captain Reynolds," exclaimed the King. "My son!"
Giselle swallowed nervously, doing his best to maintain a rigid smile of his own. The senile old fool had mistaken him for his younger son. Worse yet, the prince himself was standing not 4 paces away. The queen's wooden grin twitched slightly. Princess Therese's perfect lips twisted with scorn. The Lord Chamberlain gave an awkward cough.
No, Your Majesty, this is...
But it was too late. Without any warning, the monarch struggled to his feet and folded Giselle in an enthusiastic embrace, his heavy crown slipping over to one side of his head and one of its jewel-encrusted prongs nearly poking Giselle in the eye. Lord Hoff's jaw opened silently. The two princes goggled. Giselle could only manage a helpless gurgle.
"My son!"
blubbered the King, his voice choked with emotion.
"Reynolds, I'm so glad you're back. When I am gone, Ladislaw will need your help. He is so weak, and the crown is such a heavy weight. You were always the better suited for it. Such a heavy weight,"
he sobbed into Giselle's shoulder. It was like a hideous nightmare. Ladislaw and the real Reynolds gawked at each other, then back at their father, both looking sick. Therese was sneering down her nose at her prospective father-in-law with undisguised contempt. From bad to much, much worse. What the hell did one do in such a situation? Could there possibly be any etiquette devised for this? Giselle patted his king awkwardly on his fat back. What else could he do? Shove the senile old idiot over on his ass with half of his subjects looking on? He was almost tempted to do it. It was a small mercy that the crowds took the King's embrace for a ringing endorsement of Giselle's fencing abilities and drowned out his words with a fresh wave of cheering. No one beyond the royal box heard what he said. They all missed the full significance of what was, without doubt, the most embarrassing moment of Giselle's life. Chapter 37 The Ideal Audience. Archlector Salt was standing by his huge window when Glockter arrived, tall and imposing as always in his spotless white coat, gazing out across the spires of the university towards the House of the Maker. A pleasant breeze was washing through the great circular room, ruffling the old man's shock of white hair and making the many papers on his enormous desk crackle and flutter. He turned as Glockter shuffled into the room.
"Inquisitor,"
he said simply, holding out his white-gloved hand, the great stone on his ring of office catching the bright sunlight from the open window and glittering with purple fire.
"I serve and obey, Your Eminence."
Glockter took the hand in his and grimaced as he bent down to kiss the ring, his cane trembling with the effort of keeping upright.
"Damn it, if the old bastard doesn't hold his hand a little lower every time, just to watch me sweat."
Salt poured himself into his tall chair in one smooth motion, elbows on the tabletop, fingers pressed together before him. Glockter could only stand and wait, his leg burning from the familiar climb through the House of Questions, sweat tickling his scalp, and wait for the invitation to sit.
"Please be seated,"
murmured the Archlector, then waited while Glockter winced his way into one of the lesser chairs at the round table.
Now tell me, has your investigation met with any success?
Some. There was a disturbance at our visitors' chambers the other night. They claim that...
Brainly an attempt to add credence to this outrageous story. Magic?
Salt snorted his disdain.
Have you discussed...